Je suis brésilien. J'ai eu plusieurs incarnations depuis plusieurs années. Pendant 22 ans, j'ai eu plusieurs mandats à l'ONU qui ont touché des pays très différents, le Togo, le Timor-Leste, le Myanmar, et des thématiques comme la violence contre les enfants ou le principe de restitution de la propriété, de la maison et de la terre. Et aussi, j'ai une carrière parallèle dans l'université, à l'Université de Saint-Paul, à l'Université de Columbia, après à la Maison de sciences de l'homme et à l'École des hautes études sociales, et finalement à Brown, au Centre international d'études. C'était mon dernier poste universitaire. On m'a invité ici pour parler sur mon travail à la commission indépendante internationale d'enquête de l'ONU sur la République arabe syrienne. C'est très important l'adjectif indépendant parce que la commission ne doit répondre qu'au Conseil des droits de l'homme, c'est-à-dire on n'a pas aucune autorité sur nous. Bien sûr, on a des rapports cordiaux avec le secrétaire général, avec le haut commissaire de l'ONU, mais on n'a pas aucun rapport bureaucratique. Je vais essayer de faire une très brève présentation en anglais parce que malheureusement, la langue qu'on parle à Genève avec mon groupe de 30 personnes, c'est l'anglais, très peu. Lamentablement par le français, donc je parle l'anglais la plupart du temps, et c'est une communication que je ferai très brève, 15-17 minutes. Et s'il y a du temps pour quelques questions, je répondrai en français. Ok. Je partage le texte avec les interprètes, donc vous auriez une très bonne version en français. Merci. 6 long years have passed since the war in the Syrian Arab Republic started. The toll that this conflict has taken on the Syrian people goes far beyond anything that we could have imagined when the uprising began in 2011, March 2011. During this barbaric conflict, the Syrian people have seen their country torn apart at the hands of an ever-growing number of belligerents, while warring parties fight for their own political and strategic interests. My former colleague, I have a great admiration for him, the UN Special Envoy to Syria, Lakhdar Brahimi, once said, quote, "Everybody had their agenda, and the interests of the Syrian people came second, third, or not at all." Sadly, these words ring truer than ever today. Syria's civil war is the worst geopolitical disaster of the 21st century. As violence escalated year after year, so did the seemingly endless number of innocent men, women, and children whose lives were lost to the conflict. No corner of the country has been left unscathed. Destruction, rubble, and chaos have replaced homes, schools, hospitals. We can speak of even a weaponization of healthcare by the destroyers of hospitals and medical centers and historical monuments. In the next minutes, I will deal with a sort of mission impossible to inform you about my 6 years of work, and the commission is the longest serving commission in the UN. Since the 80s, we have 42 commissions of inquiry. And then I speak about the murderous stalemate to the country and try to explain you why the war continues and why to negotiate exiting violence more difficult. This morning, Michel Dioca, he was saying that most of the war in the 20th and 21st century ended by negotiation. It's not the case of Syria yet. A few words about the commission. The Human Rights Council mandated the Commission to investigate all alleged violations of international human rights law after March 2012, when we recognized that the war was a non-international armed conflict. Then we applied international humanitarian law and also the Rome Convention about international crimes judged by the International Criminal Court. We don't deal happily with the political track. No negotiation. I don't have any responsibility on that. There is a special envoy, I'll say some words, dealing with that. We establish the facts, the circumstances. We identify those responsible with a view of ensuring perpetrators of violence held accountable. But until now, this is a non-existing problem. We rely primarily on first-hand accounts. The Commission has collected enormous volume of evidence that will be essential to any eventual effort to ensure accountability. We have until now sort of 6,000 interviews conducted in the region and from Geneva, and corroborate at least by another source. We don't publish any other information, just information collected by ourselves. Of course, we read everything, all the reports, all the videos, all the articles, but we don't quote anybody but just we collect, and also sometimes data from some UN agencies, for instance, UNICEF, that is in Syria. I think that's very important to say that le fait que nous n'avons pas la possibilité d'entrer en Syrie, ça ne signifie pas qu'on n'a pas accès à des informations en Syrie. Ça c'est très important. We have photographs, video recordings, satellite imagery, medical records are collected and analyzed. Another eccentricity of the Commission is that we investigate an ongoing conflict. I was seeing Libya here. For instance, the Commission of Inquiry on Libya was after the beginning of the end of the beginning of the war. And they had access to Libya, what we didn't have. What is our standard of proof? The lawyers here will appreciate that. It's met when the Commission has reasonable grounds to believe that incidents occur as described. Then why? Because we investigate an ongoing conflict, the problem is the conflict is usually unpredictable and evolving very rapidly. I like the image of a kaleidoscope. Every morning I have an image of the kaleidoscope. At the end of the day, everything has changed because the configurations among the warring parties change every day. It's not every week, it can change every day. And we have to follow this. We have to follow the images of this kaleidoscope. We don't take sides. This is something that we had managed. Of course, as Latin American, I have the great sympathy for people rebelling against authoritarians, but we don't take sides. Even if at the beginning the resolution creating it was more to investigate the crimes committed by the government of Mr. Assad, but we were the first ones to document human rights violations and war crimes by other warring parties, rebel groups, for instance. What more I can say? We are able also to accomplish something difficult today in the UN. We reach all the five permanent members. The Russian ambassador in Geneva likes to say that we don't support your resolution, but we contribute more with you than many other member states. It's more or less true. But also we have contacts with the 20 influential states from Saudi Arabia to Iran without any excuses, with all the warring parts, but the terrorist groups. We cannot access the two major terrorist groups defined by the Security Council. This is not, it's our only limited. I forgot to say something because I see that there is a camera. What I'm saying here does not express the opinion of the Commission. I'm speaking here in my own individual capacity. Sorry for this formality, but this is important. Then, what is the result of this 6 years war? Is a bitter and murderous stalemate, front lines shift incrementally as parties occasionally make tactical gains, and this generates the illusion that a military solution to the conflict is possible. In reality, the war remains deadlocked while violence reaches further through the social fabric of Syrian society. The militarization of the conflict in Syria since 2012 has each year deepened. Of course, the rebellion began as something that was expected from the Arab Spring or for the rebellions in South America against authoritarians, intellectuals, academics, students of the secondary. But they were very quickly, completely joined by military groups and countries supporting the militarization of the conflict. Most of those guys who rebelled in 2011, they are dead, they are in prison, or they are in exile. There are very few leaders of the democratic rebellion alive in Syria today. The dynamics of the conflict has become increasingly more complex, and of course more difficult for us to work. The proliferating number of parties engaged in direct hostilities on a expanding number of front lines has brought further chaos and destruction to a nation in the brink of disintegration. Civilians have been deliberately targeted for attacks by all the warring parties. They are no innocent. They are no moderate. There are some countries that like to use this adjective, some moderate rebels. This doesn't exist. Including ground and air assaults as well. Sieges, something from the Middle Ages is in practice in the war in Syria, where belligerents conflict the community, ethnic and or religious background and its perceived political loyalties. In some cases, there has been intentionally targeting of communities, notably by ISIL or the former Islamic State. In some cases, external intervention has exacerbated ethno-sectarian tensions inside the war. Almost 85% of Syrians live in poverty. Half of Syria's pre-war population of 23 million has been displaced by war. Owing to the escalation in hostilities countrywide, an additional 4.5 million Syrian men, women, and children are confined to areas where humanitarian actors, the UN, for instance, do not have regular access. Forced to leave their homes to escape the violence, more than 6.5 million Syrians now live of refugees. Neighboring Lebanon, Jordan, and Turkey, that countries that were extremely generous with the refugees, have struggled to cope with one of the largest refugee exodus in recent history. Around 1 million refugees, the exact number in 23 April 2011 was 937.718 refugees live across Europe, where most of transit and destination countries do not protect their rights and dignity. And this is a shame in Europe, in a democratic continent. They don't know how to deal with Syrian refugees. There is a specific countries that tattoo numbers in the arms of the Syrian refugees and use rubber gloves to deal with refugee children in a country in the very center of Europe. This is a shame. It's very risky that I'm saying this here. Over the past 6 years, thousands of detainees have been killed while in the custody of warring parties. Syrian civilians have been arbitrarily arrested and unlawfully detained, taken hostage, or kidnapped since the conflict erupted. Thousands more have disappeared after initial arrest by state forces or while moving through government-held territory. Those who bear the greatest responsibility for the crimes, violations, and abuses committed against Syrians fear no consequences. Until now, not a single case of accountability for the perpetrators in all warring parts. The Commission has repeatedly called upon the Security Council, that is successful, to refer the situation to the International Criminal Court, because Syria is not part of the Rome Convention. Then the case of Syria cannot be presented to the ICC. Or we gave several suggestions, so it's an ad hoc international tribunal. The absence of decisive action by the community of states, particularly by the Security Council, has nourished a deeply culture of impunity and also contribute for the radicalization of this war, the growing radicalization in 6 years of war. Why the war continues for so long? That is the question. Since the first report in 2011, we said clear and loudly, since then repeated as a mantra, that there is no military solution for the crisis. The only one out of this conflict is for the parties to engage in genuine, all-inclusive, and constructive political dialogue. The continuing war represents a profound failure of diplomacy because of the very nature of the war. Influential states, that is the euphemism that you use for the countries involved sponsoring, financing, supporting the warring parties. Influential states have acted with equivocation in their efforts to extinguish the conflict in Syria. While upholding the need for a political solution, some have deepened their military involvement, accentuating the internationalization. Even if it's a non-international conflict, they accentuated the internationalization of the conflict, believing that military pressure is a prerequisite for any political process to succeed. External actors have flooded the warring parties they support with money, fighters, and weapons. There are transfers of arms, ammunition, and other forms of military support from regional and international powers for all warring parties. We are always asking for an embargo of arms, also without any success. Very interesting data. Over 90% of the arms in Syria were manufactured in countries that are permanent members of the UN Security Council. I don't need to tell you those who are those champions of arming the warring parties. The porous borders of Syria facilitated the involvement of regional armed actors increasingly along sectarian lines. The dynamics of the conflict are extremely complex, I'm repeating that, and extend well beyond its border. The overtones of sectarianism presenting many of the violations find their roots in politics. It is politics that push sectarianism, engenders violence, and empowers its perpetrators. I would dare to say in front of so many experts, I would say that we can speak of a politicization of ethnicity. The fact that the underlying battle is multi-party rather than two-sided also works against the resolution of the conflict. The war has mutated in a multi-sided and highly fluid war of attrition where belligerents have repeatedly experienced such and setbacks. This has served only to fuel the illusion that a military victory remains possible. Now the last thing I'll say, why it's so difficult to exit from Venice? During the course of the war, the UN Secretary General, the UN Security Council, and the Human Rights Council launched international peace initiatives during different moments with mixed results. Geneva has been at the center of international peace efforts since the Syrian conflict began in 2011. In March 2012, Kofi Annan, then UN and Arab League joint envoy, presented a six-point plan. The plan presented by Kofi Annan linked a cessation of armed violence to the creation, quote, an effective UN supervision mechanism, end of quote, paving the way for a peacekeeping mission. The plan did not call for Assad's departure. Instead, Annan demanded a transitional governing body to administer the end of his political system. The plan has borrowed ideas endorsed by the Human Rights Council and proposed by our commission, but it deliberately emphasizes politics and security issues rather than human rights concerns. Perhaps Kofi Annan attempt to resolve this by engineering a negotiated transition came too late, as both the Syrian government and its opponents were trapped in a escalatory cycle of violence with so many supporters of this militarization. It's also tragic that the Security Council did not head off the Syrian crisis escalating in 2011 before a settlement became almost impossible. The UN Med talks in Geneva remain today the main basis for the political solution and transition. Then we have meetings in 2012, we have meetings in 2014, we have meeting in 2016. Of course, I've simplified everything. In February, March 2017, there was the most recent round of negotiation, but the so-called Geneva IV achieved no breakthrough, but concluded with an agreed agenda, and both parties claimed a small success. And in previous failed attempts, no delegation walked away. This was saluted as a very positive sign. Nobody left the conference, as it happened in the previous occasions. I just mentioned that the Geneva process and the negotiation talks, three features persist to hamper negotiation. They are the split among the five permanent members. I don't need to elaborate on that. The Russian Federation, China, and the three Western, the P3 Western members on the other side. The composition of the delegations of the different rebel groups is one of the most difficult things. The definition of the nature and the process of transition, and particularly over the question of President Assad's future. Ban Ki-moon, the previous Secretary General, once said negotiations became a hostage of the issue of the departure of President Assad. In July 2011, a lot of member states were saying that Assad was finished. But there were some dissenting ambassadors. I quote, for instance, the special ambassador to Syria, Eric Chevalier. He had some doubts about the next fall of Assad. And then he informed Paris about that. What was the answer from Paris? Quote, your information does not interest us. Bashar al-Assad must fall and will fall. End of quote. Mr. Assad didn't fall, and I don't see any perspective that he will fall soon in 2017. Then beyond the Geneva talks, there were infinity of formal or informal conferences in different cities, Montreux, Lausanne, when there was the watch or Salon de l'Automobile in Geneva, Moscow, Cairo, Zabadani, Vienna, Riyadh, and Astana in Kazakhstan. Looking I think, very irresponsibly through all these years, without, because I don't have any responsibility for the political crime. I must recognize that the conflict in Syria has proven particularly resistant to mediation, something that Viviakis alluded to, quoting another study. Nobody has been in the different delegations were prepared to whatever necessary to survive. To survive was more interesting than the peace or the cessation of the conflict, even whatever the cost of the country. It will find very hard to share power or to remove the president without risk of collapse. The opposition, the myriad of hundreds of rebel groups, immensely divided on all the instances among themselves, has contributed to the intractability of the conflict through its maximalist demands for the fall of the regime, the confrontation, the need to confrontation when the regime still retains significant support, and its unwillingness, where in the name of democratic of Islamist regime, to accept a political compromise. As in Latin America, there was a divide between a fractious exiled opposition, increasingly fragmented in multiple localized fractions and dominated by intransigent and often jihadist or even terrorist factions backed by external sponsors. Thus, the warring parties were not readily amenable to a compromise political settlement or fully welcome UN mediation. I think I will finish, but before I finish, I'd like to say that to end with some auspicious note, because at the beginning of this year there were some meetings in Astana, in Kazakhstan, under as guarantors Turkey, Iran, and Russia. And this was a sort of breakthrough. First, a sort of ceasefire is being held in most of the territory. And the last creation is the definition of four de-escalating areas where there will be no bombardment at all. This is very good for the population. But at this very moment that we speak, in several areas of Syria, the population continues to be targeted by bombardments or by shelling. I think that the case of Syria, until the conclusion of our research, will continue as one of the most difficult cases of exiting violence. Thank you. Thank you.